I did not intend to get close enough to be Medea's primary target. Nor did I have Meg's weakness, a conflicted desire, misguided but powerful, to please her stepfather and reclaim some semblance of home and family, which Medea could and would exploit. Besides, the idea of walking around with lupines sticking out of my ears made me queasy. "Get ready," I warned.
"What?"
Meg asked. I pointed at Medea's chariot, now charging toward us out of the gloom. I traced my finger across my throat, the universal sign for "kill that sorceress and her dragons." Meg summoned her swords. She charged the sun dragons as if they were not 10 times her size. Medea yelled with what sounded like real concern.
"Move, Meg!"
Meg charged on, her festive ear protection bouncing up and down like giant blue dragonfly wings. Just before a head-on collision, Piper shouted,
"Dragons, halt!"
Medea countered,
"Dragons, go!"
The result? Chaos not seen since Plan Thermopylae. The beasts lurched in their harnesses, right dragon charging forward, left dragon stopping completely. Right stumbled, pulling left forward, so the two dragons crashed together. The yoke twisted, and the chariot toppled sideways, throwing Medea across the pavement like a cow from a catapult. Before the dragons could recover, Meg plunged in with her double blades. She beheaded left and right, releasing from their bodies a blast of heat so intense my sinuses sizzled. Piper ran forward and yanked her dagger from the dead dragon's eye.
"Good job," she told Meg.
"What?"
Meg asked. I emerged from behind a cement column where I had courageously taken cover, waiting in case my friends required backup. Pools of dragon blood steamed at Meg's feet. Her lupine ear accessories smoked, and her cheeks were burned. But otherwise, she looked unharmed. The heat radiating from the sun dragon bodies had already started to cool. 30 feet away, in a compact car-only spot, Medea struggled to her feet. Her dark braided hairdo had come undone, spilling down one side of her face like oil from a punctured tanker. She staggered forward, baring her teeth. I slung my bow from my shoulder and fired a shot. My aim was decent, but even for a mortal, my strength was feeble. Medea flicked her fingers. A gust of wind sent my arrow spinning into the dark.
"You killed Phil and Don,"
snarled the sorceress.
"They've been with me for millennia."
"What?"
Meg asked. With a wave of her hand, Medea summoned a stronger blast of air. Meg flew across the parking garage, crashed into the pillar, and crumpled, her swords clattering against the asphalt.
"Meg!"
I tried to run to her, but more wind swirled around me, caging me in a vortex. Medea laughed.
"Stay right there, Apollo. I'll get to you in a moment. Don't worry about Meg. The descendants of Plumneus are of hardy stock. I won't kill her unless I have to. Nero wants her alive."
The descendants of Plumneus? I wasn't sure what that meant or how it applied to Meg, but the thought of her being returned to Nero made me struggle harder. I threw myself against the miniature cyclone. The wind shoved me back. If you've ever held your hand out the window of the sun Maserati as it speeds across the sky and felt the force of 1,000-mile-an-hour wind shear threatening to rip your immortal fingers off, I'm sure you can relate.
"As for you, Piper,"
Medea's eyes glittered like black ice,
"you remember my aerial servants, the Venti? I could simply have one throw you against a wall and break every bone in your body. But what fun would that be?"
She
she paused and seemed to consider her words. Actually, that would be a lot of fun.
Too scared?
Piper blurted out. Of facing me yourself, woman to woman? Medea sneered. Why do heroes always do that? Why do they try to taunt me into doing something foolish?
Because it usually works,
Piper said sweetly. She crouched with her blowgun in one hand and her knife in the other, ready to lunge or dodge as needed.
You keep saying you're going to kill me. You keep telling me how powerful you are, but I keep beating you.
I don't see a powerful sorceress. I see a lady with two dead dragons and a bad hairdo. I understood what Piper was doing, of course. She was giving us time for Meg to regain consciousness and for me to find a way out of my personal tornado prison. Neither event seemed likely. Meg lay motionless where she had fallen. Try as I might, I could not body slam my way through the swirling Ventus. Medea touched her crumbling hairdo, then pulled her hand away.
You've never beaten me, Piper McLean, she growled. In fact, you did me a favor by destroying my home in Chicago last year. If not for that, I wouldn't have found my new friend here in Los Angeles. Our goals align very well indeed.
Oh, I bet, Piper said. You and Caligula, the most twisted Roman emperor in history. A match made in Tartarus. In fact, that's where I'm going to send you. On the other side of the chariot wreckage, Meg McCaffrey's fingers twitched. Her blue bonnet earplugs shivered as she took a deep breath. I had never been so glad to see wildflowers tremble in someone's ears. I pushed my shoulder against the wind. I still couldn't break through. But the barrier seemed to be softening, as if Medea was losing focus on her minion. Venti were fickle spirits. Without Medea keeping it on task, the air servant was likely to lose interest and fly off to find some nice pigeons or airplane pilots to harass.
Brave words, Piper, said the sorceress.
Caligula wanted to kill you and Jason Grace, you know. It would have been simpler.
But I convinced him it would be better to let you suffer in exile. I liked the idea of you and your formerly famous father stuck on a dirt farm in Oklahoma. Both of you slowly going mad with boredom and hopelessness.
Piper's jaw muscles tensed. Suddenly she reminded me of her mother, Aphrodite, whenever someone on Earth compared their own beauty to hers.
You're going to regret letting me live.
Probably, Medea shrugged. But it has been fun watching your world fall apart.
As for Jason,
that lovely boy with the name of my former husband.
What about him? Piper demanded. If you've hurt him...
Hurt him?
Not at all.
I imagine he's in school right now, listening to some boring lecture, or writing an essay, or whatever dreary work mortal teenagers do. The last time you two were in the maze, she smiled.
Yes, of course. I know about that.
We granted him access to the Sibyl.
That's the only way to find her, you know. I have to allow you to reach the center of the maze.
Unless you're wearing the Emperor's shoes, of course. Medea laughed, as if the idea amused her.
And really,
they wouldn't go with your outfit. Meg tried to sit up. Her glasses had slipped sideways and were hanging from the tip of her nose. I elbowed my cyclone cage. The wind was definitely swirling more slowly now.
Piper gripped her knife. What did you do to Jason? What did the Sibyl say?
She only told him the truth,
Medea said with satisfaction.
He wanted to know how to find the Emperor, the Sibyl told him.
But she told him a bit more than that,
as oracles often do.
The truth was enough to break Jason Grace. He won't be a threat to anyone now.
Neither will you.
You're going to pay, Piper said.
Lovely.
Medea rubbed her hands. I'm feeling generous, so I'll grant your request.
A duel just between us, woman to woman.
Choose your weapon.
I'll choose mine. Piper hesitated, no doubt remembering how the wind had knocked my arrow aside. She shouldered her blowgun, leaving herself armed with just her dagger.
A pretty weapon, Medea said. Pretty like Helen of Troy.
Pretty like you.
But woman to woman, let me give you some advice. Pretty can be useful. Powerful is better.
For my weapon, I choose Helios, the Titan of the Sun.
She lifted her arms, and fire erupted around her.
Chapter 18.
Whoa there, Medea. Don't be all up in my face with your hot granddad.
Rule of dueling etiquette. When choosing a weapon for single combat, you should absolutely not choose to wield your grandfather.
I was no stranger to fire.
I had fed nuggets of molten gold to the sun horses with my bare hands. I'd gone swimming in the calderas of active volcanoes. Hephaestus does throw a great pool party.
I had withstood the fiery breath of giants, dragons, and even my sister before she'd brushed her teeth in the morning. But none of those horrors could compare to the pure essence of Helios, former Titan of the Sun.
He had not always been hostile.
Oh, he was fine in his glory days. I remembered his beardless face, eternally young and handsome, his curly dark hair crowned with a golden diadem of fire that made him too bright to look upon for more than an instant. In his flowing golden robes, his burning scepter in hand, he would stroll through the halls of Olympus, chatting and joking and flirting shamelessly.
Yes, he was a Titan, but Helios had supported the gods during our first war with Kronos. He had fought at our sides against the giants. He possessed a kind and generous aspect, warm, as one would expect from the sun.
But gradually, as the Olympians gained power and fame among human worshippers, the memory of the Titans faded. Helios appeared less and less often in the halls of Mount Olympus. He became distant, angry, fierce, withering, all those less desirable solar qualities.
Humans began to look at me, brilliant, golden, and shining, and associate me with the sun. Can you blame them?
I never asked for the honor. One morning I simply woke up and found myself the master of the sun chariot, along with all my other duties.
Helios faded to a dim echo, a whisper from the depths of Tartarus.
Now, thanks to his evil sorceress granddaughter, he was back. Well, sort of. A white-hot maelstrom roared around Medea. I felt Helios's anger, his scorching temper that used to scare the daylights out of me. Ew, bad pun, sorry.
Helios had never been a god of all trades. He was not like me, with many talents and interests. He did one thing with dedication and piercing focus. He drove the sun. Now I could feel how bitter he was, knowing that his role had been assumed by me, a mere dabbler in solar matters, a weekend sun chariot driver. For Medea, gathering his power from Tartarus had not been difficult. She had simply called on his resentment, his desire for revenge. Helios was burning to destroy me, the god who had eclipsed him. Ew, there's another one.
Piper McLean ran. This was not a matter of bravery or cowardice. A demigod's body simply wasn't designed to endure such heat. Had she stayed in Medea's proximity, Piper would have burst into flames. The only positive development, my Ventus jailer vanished. Most likely because Medea couldn't focus on both him and Helios. I stumbled toward Meg, yanked her to her feet, and dragged her away from the growing firestorm.
Oh no, Apollo, Medea called out. No running away.
I pulled Meg behind the nearest cement column and covered her as a curtain of flame sliced across the garage. Sharp and fast and deadly, sucking the air from my lungs and setting my clothes on fire. I rolled instinctively, desperately, and crawled behind the next column over, smoking and dizzy. Meg staggered to my side. She was steaming and red, but still alive. Her toasted lupines stubbornly rooted in her ears. I had shielded her from the worst of the heat. From somewhere across the parking garage, Piper's voice echoed,
Hey, Medea! Your aim sucks!
I peeked around the column as Medea turned toward the sound. The sorceress stood fixed in place, encircled in fire, releasing slices of white heat in every direction, like spokes from the center of a wheel. One wave blasted in the direction of Piper's voice. A moment later, Piper called,
Nope, getting colder.
Meg shook my arm.
What do we do?
My skin felt like a cooked sausage casing. Blood sang in my veins, the lyrics being, hot, hot, hot. I knew I would die if I suffered even another glancing blast from that fire. But Meg was right. We had to do something. We couldn't let Piper take all the quite literal heat.
Come out, Apollo, Medea taunted. Say hello to your old friend.
Together you will fuel the new sun.
Another curtain of heat flashed past, a few columns away. The essence of Helios did not roar or dazzle with many colors. It was ghostly white, almost transparent. But it would kill us as fast as exposure to a nuclear core. Public safety announcement. Listener, do not go to your local nuclear power plant and stand in the reactor chamber. I had no strategy to defeat Medea. I had no godly powers, no godly wisdom, nothing but a terrified feeling that if I survived this, I would need another set of pink camo pants. Meg must have seen the hopelessness in my face.
Ask the arrow, she yelled. I will keep Magic Lady distracted.
I hated that idea. I was tempted to yell back,
What?
Before I could, Meg darted off. I fumbled for my quiver and pulled forth the arrow of Dodona.
A wise projectile. We need help. Is't hot in hither? The arrow asked. Or is't just me?
We have a sorceress throwing Titan heat around, I yelled.
Look!
I wasn't sure if the arrow had magical eyes or radar or some other way to sense its environment, but I stuck its point around the corner of the pillar where Piper and Meg were now playing a deadly game of chicken, fried chicken, with Medea's blasts of grandfather fire.
Hast yond wench a blowgun?
The arrow demanded.
Yes.
Fie. A bow and arrows are far superior.
She's half Cherokee, I said. It's a traditional Cherokee weapon. Now can you please tell me how to defeat Medea?
Mmm,
the arrow mused.
Thou must use the blowgun.
But you just said...
Remind me not. 'Tis bitter to speak of. Thou hast thy answer.
The arrow went silent. The one time I wanted it to elaborate, the arrow shut up, naturally. I shoved it back in my quiver and ran to the next column, taking cover under a sign that read Honk.
Piper!
I yelled. She glanced over from five pillars away. Her face was pulled in a tight grimace. Her arms looked like cooked lobster shells. My medical mind told me she had a few hours at best before heatstroke set in. Nausea, dizziness, unconsciousness, probably death. But I focused on the few hours part. I needed to believe we would live long enough to die from such causes. I mimed shooting a blowgun, then pointed in Medea's direction. Piper stared at me like I was crazy. I couldn't blame her. Even if Medea didn't bat away the dart with a gust of wind, the missile would never make it through that swirling wall of heat. I could only shrug and mouth the words, "Trust me, I asked my arrow." What Piper thought of that I couldn't tell, but she unslung her blowgun. Meanwhile, across the parking garage, Meg taunted Medea in typical Meg fashion.
"Dummy!"
she yelled. Medea sent out a vertical blade of heat, though judging from her aim, she was trying to scare Meg rather than kill her. "Come out and stop this foolishness, dear," she called, filling her words with concern. "I don't want to hurt you, but the Titan is hard to control." I ground my teeth. Her words were a little too close to Nero's mind games, holding Meg in check with the threat of his alter ego, the Beast. I just hoped Meg couldn't hear a word through her smoldering wildflower earbuds. While Medea had her back turned, looking for Meg, Piper stepped into the open. She took her shot. The dart flew straight through the wall of fire and speared Medea between the shoulder blades. How? I can only speculate. Perhaps, being a Cherokee weapon, it was not subject to the rules of Greek magic. Perhaps just as celestial bronze will pass straight through regular mortals, not recognizing them as legitimate targets, the fires of Helios could not be bothered to disintegrate a puny blowgun dart. Whatever the case, the sorceress arched her back and screamed. She turned, glowering, then reached behind her and pulled out the missile. She stared at it incredulously. "A blowgun dart? Are you kidding me?" The fires continued to swirl around her, but none shot toward Piper. Medea staggered, her eyes crossed. "And it's poison?" The sorceress laughed, her voice tinged with hysteria. "You would try to poison me, the world's foremost expert on poisons. There is no poison I can't cure. You cannot..." She dropped to her knees. Green spittle flew from her mouth.
"Whoa, what is this concoction?"
"Compliments of my Grandpa Tom," Piper said. "Old family recipe."
Medea's complexion turned as pale as the fire. She forced out a few words, interspersed with gagging.
"You think changes anything? My power doesn't summon Helios. I hold him back."
She fell over sideways. Rather than dissipating, the cone of fire swirled even more furiously around her.
"Run!"
I croaked. Then I yelled for all I was worth.
"Run now!"
We were halfway back to the corridor when the parking lot behind us went supernova. Chapter 19. In my underclothes, slathered with grease, really not as fun as it sounds. I am not sure how we got out of the maze. Lacking any evidence to the contrary, I will credit my own courage and fortitude. Yes, that must have been it. Having escaped the worst of the Titan's heat, I bravely supported Piper and Meg and exhorted them to keep going. Smoking and half-conscious but still alive, we stumbled through the corridors, retracing our steps until we arrived at the freight elevator.
With one last heroic burst of strength, I flipped the lever and we ascended.
We spilled into the sunlight. Regular sunlight. Not the vicious zombie sunlight of a quasi-dead titan. And collapsed on the sidewalk. Grover's shocked face hovered over me.
Hot,
I whimpered. Grover pulled out his panpipe. He began to play, and I lost consciousness. In my dreams, I found myself at a party in ancient Rome. Caligula had just opened his newest palace at the base of the Palatine Hill, making a daring architectural statement by knocking out the back wall of the Temple of Castor and Pollux and using it as his front entrance. Since Caligula considered himself a god, he saw no problem with this. But the Roman elites were horrified. This was sacrilege akin to setting up a big-screen TV on a church altar and having a Super Bowl party with communion wine. That didn't stop the crowd from attending the festivities. Some gods had even shown up in disguise. How could we resist such an audacious, blasphemous party with free appetizers? Throngs of costumed revelers moved through vast torchlit halls. In every corner, musicians played songs from across the empire. Gaul, Hispania, Greece, Egypt. I myself was dressed as a gladiator. Back then, with my godly physique, I could totally pull that off. I mingled with senators who were disguised as slave girls who were disguised as senators, a few unimaginative toga ghosts, and a couple of enterprising patricians who had crafted the world's first two-man donkey costume. Personally, I did not mind the sacrilegious temple/palace. It wasn't my temple, after all. And in those first years of the Roman Empire, I found the Caesars refreshingly risque. Besides, why should we gods punish our biggest benefactors? When the emperors expanded their power, they expanded our power. Rome had spread our influence across a huge part of the world. Now we Olympians were the gods of the empire. Move over, Horus. Forget about it, Marduk. The Olympians were ascendant. We weren't about to mess with success just because the emperors got big-headed, especially when they modeled their arrogance after ours. I wandered the party incognito, enjoying being among all the pretty people, when he finally appeared. The young emperor himself, in a golden chariot pulled by his favorite white stallion, Incitatus. Flanked by Praetorian guards, the only people not in costume, Gaius Julius Caesar Germanicus was buck-naked, painted in gold from head to foot, with a spiky crown of sun rays across his brow. He was pretending to be me, obviously. But when I saw him, my first feeling wasn't anger. It was admiration. This beautiful, shameless mortal pulled off the role perfectly. "I am the new sun," he announced, beaming at the crowd, as if his smile were responsible for all the warmth in the world. "I am Helios. I am Apollo. I am Caesar. You may now bask in my light." Nervous applause from the crowd. Should they grovel? Should they laugh? It was always hard to tell with Caligula. And if you got it wrong, you usually died. The emperor climbed down from his chariot. His horse was led to the hors d'oeuvres table, while Caligula and his guards made their way through the crowd. Caligula stopped and shook hands with the senator dressed as a slave. "You look lovely, Cassius Agrippa. Will you be my slave, then?" The senator bowed.
"I am your loyal servant, Caesar."
"Excellent,"
Caligula turned to his guards. "You heard the man. He is now my slave. Take him to my slave master. Confiscate all his property and money. Let his family go free, though. I'm feeling generous." The senator spluttered, but he could not form the words to protest. Two guards hustled him away as Caligula called after him,
"Thank you for your loyalty."
The crowd shifted like a herd of cattle in a thunderstorm. Those who had been surging forward, anxious to catch the emperor's eye and perhaps win his favor, now tried their best to melt into the pack.
"It's a bad night," some whispered in warning to their colleagues. "He's having a bad night."
"Marcus Philo,"
cried the emperor, cornering a poor young man who had been attempting to hide behind the two-man donkey.
"Come out here, you scoundrel."
Princeps,
the man sputtered. "I loved the satire you wrote about me," Caligula said. "My guards found a copy of it in the forum and brought it to my attention."
Sire, said Philo, "it was only a weak jest. I didn't mean..."
"Nonsense!"
Caligula smiled at the crowd. "Isn't Philo great, everybody? Didn't you like his work? The way he described me as a rabid dog." The crowd was on the verge of full panic. The air was so full of electricity, I wondered if my father was there in disguise.
"I promised that poets would be free to express themselves,"
Caligula announced. "No more paranoia like in old Tiberius's reign." "I admire your silver tongue, Philo.
I think everyone should have a chance to admire it. I will reward you."
Philo gulped.
"Thank you, Lord."
"Guards," said Caligula, "take him away. Pull his tongue out, dip it in molten silver, and display it in the forum where everyone can admire it. Really, Philo, wonderful work."
Two praetorians hauled away the screaming poet.
"And you there,"
Caligula called. Only then did I realize the crowd had ebbed around me, leaving me exposed. Suddenly Caligula was in my face. His beautiful eyes narrowed as he studied my costume, my godly physique. "I don't recognize you," he said. I wanted to speak. I knew that I had nothing to fear from Caesar. If worse came to worse, I could simply say bye and vanish in a cloud of glitter. But I have to admit, in Caligula's presence, I was awestruck. The young man was wild, powerful, unpredictable. His audacity took my breath away. At last I managed to bow. "I am a mere actor, Caesar."
"Oh, indeed,"
Caligula brightened.
"And you play the gladiator.
Would you fight to the death in my honor?" I silently reminded myself that I was immortal. It took a little convincing. I drew my gladiator sword, which was nothing but a costume blade of soft tin.
"Point me to my opponent, Caesar."
I scanned the audience and bellowed,
"I will destroy anyone who threatens my lord."
To demonstrate, I lunged and poked the nearest praetorian guard in the chest. My sword bent against his breastplate. I held aloft my ridiculous weapon, which now resembled the letter Z. A dangerous silence followed, all eyes fixed on Caesar. Finally, Caligula laughed.
"Well done."
He patted my shoulder, then snapped his fingers. One of his servants shuffled forward and handed me a heavy pouch of gold coins. Caligula whispered in my ear,
"I feel safer already."
The emperor moved on, leaving onlookers laughing with relief, some casting me envious glances as if to ask, "What is your secret?" After that, I stayed away from Rome for decades. It was a rare man who could make a god nervous, but Caligula unsettled me. He almost made a better Apollo than I did. My dream changed. I saw Herophily again, the Sibyl of Erythria, reaching out her shackled arms, her face lit red by the roiling lava below.
Apollo, she said, it won't seem worth it to you. I'm not sure it is myself, but you must come. You must hold them together in their grief.
I sank into the lava, Herophily still calling my name as my body broke and crumbled into ash. I woke up screaming, lying on top of a sleeping bag in the cistern. Aloe Vera hovered over me, her prickly triangles of hair mostly snapped off, leaving her with a glistening buzz cut.
You're okay,
she assured me, putting her cool hand against my fevered forehead.
You've been through a lot, though.
I realized I was wearing only my underwear. My entire body was beet maroon, slathered in aloe. I couldn't breathe through my nose. I touched my nostrils and discovered I had been fitted with small green aloe nose plugs. I sneezed them out. My friends? I asked. Aloe moved aside. Behind her, Grover Underwood sat cross-legged between Piper's and Meg's sleeping bags, both girls fast asleep. Like me, they had been slathered with goo. It was a perfect opportunity to take a picture of Meg with green plugs sticking out of her nostrils for blackmail purposes, but I was too relieved that she was alive. Also, I didn't have a phone. Will they be all right? I asked. They were in worse shape than you, Grover said. It was touch and go for a while, but they'll pull through. I've been feeding them nectar and ambrosia. Aloe smiled.
Also, my healing properties are legendary.
Just wait. They'll be up and walking around by dinner.
Dinner.
I looked at the dark orange circle of sky above. Either it was late afternoon or the wildfires were closer, or both. Medea? I asked. Grover frowned. Meg told me about the battle before she passed out. But I don't know what happened to the sorceress. I never saw her. I shivered in my aloe gel. I wanted to believe Medea had died in the fiery explosion, but I doubted we could be so lucky. Helios's fire hadn't seemed to bother her. Maybe she was naturally immune, or maybe she had worked some protective magic on herself. Your dryad friends, I asked. Agave and Moneymaker? Aloe and Grover exchanged a sorrowful look. Agave might pull through, said Grover. She went dormant as soon as we got her back to her plant. But Moneymaker? He shook his head. I had barely met the dryad. Still, the news of her death hit me hard. I felt as if I were dropping green leaf coins from my body, shedding essential pieces of myself. I thought about Herophily's words in my dream. It won't seem worth it to you. I'm not sure it is myself, but you must come. You must hold them together in their grief. I feared that Moneymaker's death was only one small part of the grief that awaited us. I'm sorry, I said. Aloe patted my greasy shoulder.
It isn't your fault, Apollo. By the time you found her, she was too far gone.
Unless you'd had... She stopped herself, but I knew what she'd intended to say. Unless you'd had your godly healing powers. A lot would have been different if I'd been a god, not a pretender in this pathetic Lester Papadopoulos disguise. Grover touched the blowgun at Piper's side. The river cane tube had been badly charred, pitted with burn holes that would probably make it unusable. Something else you should know, he said. When Agave and I carried Moneymaker out of the maze, that big-eared guard, the guy with the white fur, he was gone. I considered this. You mean he died and disintegrated? Or he got up and walked away?
I don't know, Grover said. Does either seem likely?
Neither did. But I decided we had bigger problems to think about. Tonight, I said, when Piper and Meg wake up, we need to have another meeting with your dryad friends. We're going to put this burning maze out of business. Once and for all.
Chapter 20. O Muse, let us now sing in praise of botanists. They do plant stuff. Yay. Our council of war was more like a council of wincing. Thanks to Grover's magic and aloe vera's constant sliming, I mean, attention, Piper and Meg regained consciousness. By dinner time, the three of us could wash, get dressed, and even walk around without screaming too much. But we still heard a great deal. Every time I stood up too fast, tiny golden Caligulas danced before my eyes. Piper's blowgun and quiver, both heirlooms from her grandfather, were ruined. Her hair was singed. Her burned arms, glistening with aloe, looked like newly glazed brick. She called her father to warn him she would be spending the night with her study group, then settled into one of the cistern's brickwork alcoves with Melly and Hedge, who kept urging her to drink more water. Baby Chuck sat in Piper's lap, staring enraptured at her face, as if it were the most amazing thing in the world. As for Meg, she sat glumly by the pool, her feet in the water, a plate of cheese enchiladas in her lap. She wore a baby blue t-shirt from Macro's Military Madness, featuring a smiling cartoon AK-47 with the caption, "Shooty's Junior Marksman Club." Next to her sat Agave, looking dejected, though a new green spike had started to grow where her withered arm had fallen off. Her dryad friends kept coming by, offering her fertilizer and water and enchiladas. But Agave shook her head glumly, staring at the collection of fallen moneymaker petals in her hand. Moneymaker, I was told, had been planted on the hillside with full dryad honors. Hopefully she would be reincarnated as a beautiful new succulent. Or perhaps a white-tailed antelope squirrel. Moneymaker had always loved those. Grover looked exhausted. Playing all the healing music had taken its toll, not to mention the stress of driving back to Palm Springs at unsafe speeds in the borrowed slash slightly stolen Bedrosian mobile with 5 critical burn victims. Once we had all gathered, condolences exchanged, enchiladas eaten, aloe slimed, I began the meeting. "All of this," I announced, "is my fault." You can imagine how difficult this was for me to say. The words simply had not been in the vocabulary of Apollo. I half hoped the collected dryads, satyrs, and demigods would rush to reassure me that I was blameless. They did not. I forged on. "Caligula's goal has always been the same. To make himself a god. He saw his ancestors immortalized after their deaths, Julius, Augustus, even disgusting old Tiberius. But Caligula didn't want to wait for death. He was the first Roman emperor who wanted to be a living god." Piper looked up from playing with the baby satyr. "Caligula kind of is a minor god now, right? You said he and the 2 other emperors have been around for thousands of years. So he got what he wanted." "Partly," I agreed. "But being a minor anything isn't enough for Caligula. He always dreamed of replacing one of the Olympians. He toyed with the idea of becoming the new Jupiter or Mars. In the end, he set his sights on being..." I swallowed the sour taste from my mouth. "The new me." Coach Hedge scratched his goatee,
Hmm. If a goat wears a goatee, is it a man-tee?
So what? Caligula kills you, puts on a Hi, I'm Apollo name tag, and walks into Olympus, hoping nobody notices?
It would be worse than killing me, I said. He would consume my essence, along with the essence of Helios, to make himself the new sun god.
Prickly Pear bristled.
The other Olympians would just allow this?
The Olympians, I said bitterly, allowed Zeus to strip me of my powers and toss me to Earth. They've done half of Caligula's job for him. They won't interfere. As usual, they'll expect heroes to set things right. If Caligula does become the new sun god, I will be gone. Permanently gone. That's what Medea has been preparing for with the burning maze. It's a giant cooking pot for sun god soup.
Meg wrinkled her nose.
Gross!
For once, I was in total agreement with her. Standing in the shadows, Joshua Tree crossed his arms.
So the fires of Helios, that's what's killing our land?
I spread my hands. Well, humans aren't helping. But on top of the usual pollution and climate change, yes, the burning maze was the tipping point. Everything that's left of the Titan Helios is now coursing through this section of the labyrinth, under Southern California, slowly turning the top side into a fiery wasteland. Agave touched the side of her scarred face. When she looked up at me, her stare was as pointed as her collar.
If Medea succeeds, will all the power go into Caligula? Will the maze stop burning and killing us?
I had never considered cacti a particularly vicious life form, but as the other dryad studied me, I could imagine them tying me up with a ribbon and a large card that said, "For Caligula, from nature," and dropping me on the Emperor's doorstep.
Guys, that won't help, Grover said. Caligula's responsible for what's happening to us right now. He doesn't care about nature spirits. You really want to give him the full power of a sun god?
The dryads muttered in reluctant agreement.
I made a mental note to send Grover a nice card on Goat Appreciation Day.
So what do we do? Asked Melly. I don't want my son growing up in a burning wasteland.
Meg took off her glasses.
We kill Caligula.
It was jarring, hearing a 12-year-old girl speak so matter-of-factly about assassination. Even more jarring, I was tempted to agree with her.
Meg, I said, that may not be possible. You remember Commodus? He was the weakest of the three emperors, and the best we could do was force him out of Indianapolis. Caligula will be much more powerful, more deeply entrenched.
Don't care, she muttered. He hurt my dad. She did all this.
She gestured around at the old cistern.
What do you mean, all this? Joshua asked.
Meg shot a look at me as if to say, your turn. Once again, I explained what I had seen in Meg's memories. Aethales, as it had once been, the legal and financial pressure Caligula must have used to shut down Philip McCaffrey's work. The way Meg and her father had been forced to flee just before the house was firebombed. Joshua frowned.
I remember a saguaro named Hercules from the first greenhouse. One of the few who survived the house fire. Old, tough dryad. Always in pain from his burns. But he kept clinging to life. He used to talk about a little girl who lived in the house. He said he was waiting for her to return.
Joshua turned to Meg in amazement.
That was you?
Meg brushed a tear from her cheek.
He didn't make it?
Josh shook his head.
He died a few years ago. I'm sorry.
Agave took Meg's hand. "Your father was a great hero," she said. "Clearly he was doing his best to help plants."
"He was a botanist," Meg said, pronouncing the word as if she'd just remembered it.
The dryads lowered their heads. Hedge and Grover removed their hats.
"I wonder what your dad's big project was," Piper said. "With those glowing seeds? What did Medea call you? A descendant of Plumnaeus?"
The dryads let out a collective gasp.
"Plumnaeus?" asked Reba.
"The Plumnaeus. Even in Argentina, we know of him."
I stared at her. "You do?" Prickly Pear snorted.
"Oh, come on, Apollo. You're a god. Surely you know of the great hero Plumnaeus."
I was tempted to blame my faulty mortal memory, but I was pretty sure I had never heard the name, even when I was a god. "What monster did he slay?" Aloe edged away from me, as if she did not want to be in the line of fire when the other dryads shot their spines at me.
"Apollo," Reba chided. "A healer god should know better."
Of course, I agreed.
"But, who exactly..."
"Typical," Pear muttered.
"The killers are remembered as heroes. The growers are forgotten. Except by us nature spirits."
"Plumnaeus was a Greek king," Agave explained. "A nobleman. But his children were born under a curse. If any of them cried even once during their infancy, they would die instantly." I wasn't sure how that made Plumnaeus noble, but I nodded politely. "What happened?"
"He appealed to Demeter," said Joshua. "The goddess herself raised his next son, Orthopolis, so that he would live. In gratitude, Plumnaeus built a temple to Demeter. Ever since, his offspring have dedicated themselves to Demeter's work. They have always been great agriculturalists and botanists."
Agave squeezed Meg's hand. "I understand now why your father was able to build Aethales. His work must have been special indeed. Not only did he come from a long line of Demeter's heroes, he attracted the personal attention of the goddess, your mother. We are honored that you've come home."
"Home,"
agreed Prickly Pear.
"Home," Joshua echoed.
Meg blinked back tears.
This seemed like an excellent time for a song circle. I imagined the dryads putting their spiky arms around one another and swaying as they sang "In the Garden." I was even willing to provide ukulele music.
Coach Hedge brought us back to harsh reality.
"That's great." He gave Meg a respectful nod. "Kid, your dad must have been something. But unless he was growing some kind of secret weapon, I don't know how it helps us. We've still got an emperor to kill and a maze to destroy."
"Gleason,"
Melly chided.
"Hey, am I wrong?"
No one challenged him. Grover stared disconsolately at his hooves.
"What do we do then?"
"We stick to the plan," I said.
The certainty in my voice seemed to surprise everyone.
It definitely surprised me.
"We find the Sibyl of Erythria. She's more than just bait. She is the key to everything. I'm sure of it."
Piper cradled baby Chuck as he grabbed for her harpy feather.
"Apollo, we tried navigating the maze. You saw what happened."
"Jason Grace made it through," I said. "He found the oracle." Piper's expression darkened.
"Maybe. But even if you believe Medea, Jason only found the oracle because Medea wanted him to."
"She mentioned there was another way to navigate the maze," I said.
"The emperor's shoes.
Apparently, they let Caligula walk through safely. We need those shoes. That's what the prophecy meant. Walk the path in thine own enemy's boots. Meg wiped her nose.
So, you're saying we need to find Caligula's place and steal his shoes? While we're there, can't we just kill him?
She asked this casually, like, can we stop by Target on the way home? Hedge wagged his finger at McCaffrey.
See? Now that's a plan. I like this girl.
Friends, I said, wishing I had some of Piper's charm-speaking skills. Caligula's been alive for thousands of years. He's a minor god. We don't know how to kill him, so he stays dead. We also don't know how to destroy the maze, and we certainly don't want to make things worse by unleashing all that godly heat into the upper world. Our priority has to be the Sibyl. Because it's your priority? Pear grumbled.
I resisted the urge to yell, duh.
Either way, I said, to learn the Emperor's location, we need to consult Jason Grace. Medea told us the Oracle gave him information on how to find Caligula. Piper, will you take us to Jason? Piper frowned. Baby Chuck had her finger in his tiny fist and was moving it dangerously close to his mouth. Jason's living at a boarding school in Pasadena, she said at last. I don't know if he'll listen to me. I don't know if he'll help. But we can try. My friend Annabeth always says information is the most powerful weapon. Grover nodded.
I never argue with Annabeth.
It's settled then, I said. Tomorrow we continue our quest by busting Jason Grace out of school. Chapter 21. When life gives you seeds, plant them in dry, rocky soil. I'm an optimist. I slept poorly. Are you shocked? I was shocked. I dreamed of my most famous oracle, Delphi, though alas, it was not during the good old days when I would have been welcomed with flowers, kisses, candy, and my usual VIP table at Shea Oracle. Instead, it was modern Delphi, devoid of priests and worshippers, filled instead with the hideous stench of Python, my old enemy, who had reclaimed his ancient lair. His rotten egg-slash-rancid meat smell was impossible to forget. I stood deep in the caverns, where no mortal ever trod. In the distance, two voices conversed, their bodies lost in the swirling volcanic vapors.
It's under control, said the first, in the high nasal tones of Emperor Nero.
The second speaker growled, a sound like a chain pulling an ancient roller coaster uphill.
Very little has been under control since Apollo fell to Earth, said Python.
His cold voice sent ripples of revulsion through my body. I couldn't see him, but I could imagine his baleful amber eyes flecked with gold, his enormous dragon form, his wicked claws.
You have a great opportunity, Python continued. Apollo is weak. He is mortal. He is accompanied by your own stepdaughter. How is it that he is not yet dead?
Nero's voice tightened.
We had a difference of opinion, my colleagues and I. Commodus
is a fool,
Python hissed.
Who only cares about spectacle. We both know that. And your great uncle Caligula.
Nero hesitated.
He insisted. He has need of Apollo's power. He wants the former god to meet his fate in a very, particular way.
Python's massive bulk shifted in the darkness. I heard his scales rubbing against the stone.
I know Caligula's plan.